The following Dharma talk was presented at Common Ground Meditation Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota, as part of the monthly guest Dharma series.
Tonight I'm going to talk some, as Mark said, on the difference between judgment and discernment. I find this to be a really important thing to understand and get as we walk this path. You may have heard the statement before that we bring ourselves to the cushion, or we bring ourselves to the practice, meaning kind of like our personality. So if we are someone who is used to kind of striving in our lives, if that's our kind of mode of moving through the world, well, guess how we're going to relate to our meditation practice, right? Or maybe we're someone who is, not sure of ourselves. There's a habit of kind of not being clear. Well, when we'll bring that tendency to our practice. Am I doing it right? I'm not sure. So that's all. We bring ourselves to the practice. So some of ourselves that we bring to the practice are different in terms of our own different personalities. But one thing that I think pretty universally, at least in the beginning, that we bring to the practice is this sense of relating to our world in terms of like right and wrong, good and bad, having things being in discrete boxes. And I mean, it's the world we live in. You ever see a young toddler with an adult? You know, what's that? That's a tree. What's that? That's a car. From the very beginning, we learn to put experience into discrete boxes. And that goes as far as what something is, but also in terms of how something is. Is that good or bad? Is it right or wrong? So just to say, good and bad and right and wrong are not inherently wrong or bad. They're very helpful in us helping us inhabit this planet together. They're extremely helpful. When we can somewhat agree on what's right and wrong together, it helps us to have to be able to live in this world together with some lack of chaos. It's a good thing. So I also wanted to say, when I use the word judgment tonight, I'm not only using it in the way that you might normally think of the word judgment, like I judge you as being, you know, a good person, or I judge you as being not so good person, you know, that kind of judgment. I'm using judgment, including that, but also much broader in terms of any kind of categorization of things. So we agree, we make some judgments on experience, and we agree on them, and it helps us be together. But what judgment does, it's based in duality, on this and that. All judgment is based on opposites. And it artificially puts experience itself into separate boxes based upon the particular likes and dislikes of an individual or a collection of individuals. So individually, though, we may judge something as wrong, while another person judges something, the same thing, as right. Much conflict can stem from these opposing judgments. One of the things that we collectively judge in a similar way is that harming another human being is not a good thing. Not that it doesn't happen, but pretty much everyone is on board for that one. So these dualities of right and wrong, good and bad, better or worse, clean and dirty, the whole realm of taking just experience itself and putting it into categories. This is the broader way I'm using the word judgment. Judgment is about structures of how things are, how things should be, based on a set of rules, opinions, or views. Judgments arbitrarily divide things up. One of the beautiful things that happened when the first humans went out into space, when the very first cosmonauts and astronauts got up high enough to look down onto the Earth, they had kind of an enlightening experience, didn't they? What was that experience? No lines. For the first time, a human being looked down and saw it for what it actually was. Just the experience of the Earth floating in space without the arbitrarily drawn lines on it. And for many of those, I think back then it was just men, for many of those people, it was a deeply moving experience, and some of them even wrote about that. So even using the word judgment in terms of dividing up what just is into separate pieces, this country, that country. This judgment is about this and that. Now, when something falls outside of what we deem as appropriate or acceptable, we judge it badly. And when it falls within this arbitrary, often shifting definition of what is acceptable, then we judge it positively. The other result of judgment is that it supports a sense of self. There is the self that is doing the judging. There is the self that is having these ideas of what's right and wrong or good and bad. And then when we use judging kind of in its more normal way, like I said, you know, I'm judging you for being this way or that way, then there's the self that can often be being what the judging is trying to protect. When we're in judgmental mode, usually we're in a defensive, protective mode. And the sense of self is quite strong at that time. You know, the wagon circle of one. Judgment is about preferences. Remember, it's arbitrary. What one person judges as right or wrong, another person can judge it completely differently. Now, while it's on one level, some of these common judgments we have amongst ourselves they're helpful. We have the coat room or the entryway, and we have the bathroom. We all agree. There's certain things you do in the coat room, and there's certain things you do in the bathroom, and you don't mix them up. It's like we can all kind of be together. It helps with some ease and kind of knowing what we're all going to do. So on one level, it's actually quite helpful. But when it comes to understanding the truth of the way things are and liberating the heart and mind, the helpfulness factor goes way down. There is a beautiful, pithy, just wonderful piece of spiritual writing that comes from the Zen tradition way back from someone called the Third Zen Patriarch. And there's a tradition in that lineage that when someone becomes enlightened or has an enlightenment experience, that they would write about it. Maybe it's a small verse, two or three lines, or maybe something longer. So this person wrote something after they became enlightened, and it's the title of it is called Faith in Mind. And if you haven't read it, I highly recommend it. It's really one of the great pieces of spiritual literature out there. And it's quite long, but the first couple sentences or lines really sum up the what it's all about. And I'll share those with you. It says, "The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences." So they're saying this thing that we're all doing, it's actually not that hard if we have no preferences. Or you could substitute the word judging, this dividing. Okay, so the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences, yet make the slightest distinction and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. Meaning where we are and the goal, which itself is a bit of a duality, but anyways, where we are and the goal is set infinitely apart. You can't get there when we are making even the slightest distinction, i.e. when we're dividing up the suchness of things into categories. As soon as we do that, the ability to see clearly vanishes, and the goal is not attainable. After hearing that, you could say, yeah, but we have a preference for being free, right? See, those of you who question authority a lot in your life, you'll bring that to the cushion. We have a preference for being free, don't we? Yes, and ultimately, the movement towards that freedom isn't about someone doing it based on good and bad or right and wrong. It's just happening, and I'll get more into that in a bit. So instead, we shift our effort and attention in our practice from trying to be on the correct side of our judgments, on the correct side of the fence of this and that. We switch our attention from doing that to noticing, being in the present moment and noticing, what is it that leads to happiness? And what is it that leads to suffering? This is discernment. This is, now we're in the realm of discernment. Discernment is wisdom based and simply knows what leads to suffering and what doesn't. Judgment is intellectually based. Discernment is wisdom based. Discernment is wisdom itself, really. So, what I just said before, and what hopefully this talk is supporting in you, will be this shift from your effort in practice, from doing it right, taking that energy and effort and just putting it into being present and watching. Not judging what we see, just watching. And trusting, and through time, those of you who have been practicing for a while, trusting and seeing in time that just that seeing, just that looking in the present moment gives rise to a knowing of what leads to happiness and what leads to suffering. You see the paradigm shift? It's really quite dramatic. One way you can view the Four Noble Truths, and I'll just say them quickly so we're all in the same arena, that the Buddha talked about, or the Noble Truth of unsatisfactoriness, sometimes known as suffering, the Noble Truth of the cause of this unsatisfactoriness or suffering. That's the second one. The third noble truth is the noble truth of the cessation of this unsatisfactoriness, this agitation, this suffering. And the fourth noble truth is the noble truth of the path, the way that leads to the end of this unsatisfactoriness. One way that you can kind of frame this is happiness and its causes and suffering and its causes. It's basically what it's saying. And this is what discernment brings us deeper and deeper into more, you could say a more intimate, a more refined, a deeper knowing, not intellectually, full body, full being knowing of what leads to happiness and what leads to suffering. Judgment does not have the ability to do that. It's in a different ballpark. What judgment can do is divide things up into good and bad and right and wrong or countries or whatever. That it can do. It does it really good. And again, on not to just completely poo-poo it, it's helpful for us on a certain level. But in terms of freeing the heart and mind, it can't go there. It doesn't have the ability to do that. Only discernment has the ability to do that. So I want to give you just a couple examples so to help you see maybe side by side of what these might look like. And then later on, we'll look at some more examples. I notice that in all my Dharma talks, I use food examples. Classic greed type. So let's say you've just eaten dinner, and then you see on the table dessert. So there are different ways that we could go about making the decision whether we're going to have dessert or not. What judgment would say is you're good perhaps if you don't have the dessert, and you're bad if you do. Or it's right somehow to not have the dessert because maybe it'll be healthier for you, it'll whatever. And it'll be wrong in some way if you do have it. Right? So you go into it based in duality based in that. So that's one way to come to a decision on whether you're going to have that dessert or not. But do you see that's all in the mind? It's all about structures. Not resisting temptation equals good. Not resisting equals bad. It's like it's some formula. Or we could be present, know we have a body, and feel into our body. What does our body feel like? Real-time information. How's that stomach feel right now? Pretty good. Not too full. Yeah. Maybe there's room for that dessert. Or, how's your stomach feel? Oof. Feeling a little tight. A little uncomfortable. How's it going to be if you have that dessert? Oof. Not good. This is discernment. There's no bringing in of categories. It's just our own information that we get through being present in the moment. We don't have to make a decision. The body says, yeah, no problem having that. We've got plenty of room. Or the body says, don't do that to me. It's not going to be good. Do you see it's not like us? Do you see that there's not self in that? With the judgment, there's the self. There's the one who is keeping to their diet, or there is the one that's breaking their diet. It's a very stronger sense of self when we're in the realm of judgment. But when we're in the realm of discernment, there's just knowing. And it's the knowing that makes the decision, not us. It can be more nuanced, though. Here's a more nuanced example, more personal example. Because I don't really know anything about, you know, the dessert thing. At IMS, where I work, the institution, i.e., you know, all the people in it, the staff, the board members, the teachers, we're trying to do our best at waking up to how we are part of the endemic structural racism in our society. You know, gee, why is it that there's only white people on our retreat? And so we're trying to find out what the roots of that are and how we are we've seen how we are unknowingly contributing to that. And so as we explore that collectively and individually, it can be hard. And just before I go any further about saying how hard it is for a white person to wake up to racism, just to say, that's not where their real hardship is, right? The real hardship is getting pulled over by the police for no reason other than your skin color. The real hardship is not having the same chance at getting the loan at the bank because of your skin color. The real hardship is walking into a store and having someone eye you with suspicion just because your skin color. So just to say where the difficulty really lies. And, not but, and, you know, as you kind of start to become conscious, as I start to become conscious with what I do and what I say and how I do and how I say things that can be, that can just further entrench the systemic racism in our country, it can be, ouch, humbling, feel bad, ashamed, not good enough, you know, the whole realm of kind of difficult emotions that can come up. So judgment is bad, wrong for being that way. Be another way, good, right? So in discernment says, no. Were you born in this country? Yes. Were you raised in this country? Yes. Then you're racist. It's not personal. It just is. There's no judgment in that. It's just a clear seeing of how things are. It doesn't take the responsibility away, but it's a whole different, out of the realm of good and bad and right and wrong, and into the realm of seeing, just seeing the truth of how things are. If I'm stuck in shame, there's no way I'm going to see it. I'm too contracted around a sense of self that's bad. And you can't see clearly in that space. It's not possible. It's not possible to see the truth of how things are when we're really stuck in right and wrong and good and bad. So you could say, in our practice, as discernment grows, as the ability to just see things as they are, that view, you could say that right view, becomes more and more clear until the view of how things are becomes, you could say, perfect. And that perfect view of how things are is synonymous with enlightenment. For those of you who know the Eightfold Path, the path factor of wise view, when wise view becomes perfect, that is just synonymous for enlightenment. So this development of discernment is, we're really on the right track. So, what does this mean? One of the things it means that when you notice that you're suffering and you see why, you see how that's come about, that's good practice. That's excellent practice. You're seeing suffering and its causes. Your clear seeing is growing. Your discernment is growing. You're working on enlightenment itself when you see that you're suffering and how it's come about. Which, of course, is some form of craving, some form of the second noble truth, the cause of this unsatisfactoriness, or the cause of this suffering. This pushing and pulling on life, wanting and not wanting, messing with life, not letting it be. That is the cause of all our unhappiness. Now, it's not right and it's not wrong that craving is the cause of suffering. Craving is not an inherently wrong thing. See, even that is made up when we say it's wrong. It's just so. It's not wrong that this dropped. It's just how things are. It's just one of the laws that govern this world that we live in. It's not wrong that craving is the cause of suffering. It's just so. There's no judgment about this. So there's nothing inherently wrong with craving, and it wouldn't even be worth us giving it a moment of our attention if we didn't care that we suffered. But we do care, and therefore it is of the highest importance that we wake up to all the ways that we push and pull on this life. You see the difference between judgment and discernment there? Judgment would say craving is bad or wrong. Discernment simply knows this event will lead to suffering. But there's no making it wrong. When we make something wrong or right, it's constricted. The ability to see clearly becomes lost. Very simple. I judge someone in a certain way. They are this. Yeah? And especially the more I've got them as being this, the ability to see that they're that becomes not possible. Right? You know, putting people in boxes, right? This is not esoteric. Maybe they are behaving like that in the moment. But because the strength of the judgment of them being like this is there, the ability to see clearly is not there. And I cannot see that they are behaving like, like that. Our ability to see clearly to the degree that we're in this and that, in that realm, our ability to see clearly diminishes. So let's look at some more specifics about judgment and discernment. So in our formal practice, when we notice wanting in the mind, desire, or not wanting in the mind, aversion, when we notice those, we could move away from them in two ways. One is, it's bad that those are in the mind, and therefore need to get to where it's good, i.e. let them go. And, you know, if everyone in the world let go of craving in their mind because it was bad and, you know, let that go, that wouldn't be so bad. But when we do that, the seeing that it is craving, the wanting and the not wanting, that leads to suffering is obscured. Because what's in the mind is judging. Judging comes down and we're not able to actually see the truth of craving. Yes, we let it go because that's what the instructions say, right? Let it go and come back to the anchor. Okay, I'll do that. Beating a dead horse a bit, but it's so important. Remember what we're coming into practice with. We're coming into the practice with this superstructure of dividing things. So we hear the instructions, notice desire in the mind, notice aversion in the mind, let them go and come back to the anchor. And we may even hear the instructions so that you can see clearly or whatever, but we're in the realm of right and wrong and good and bad because we're coming into the practice with that bias. And so we see desire in the mind and we let it go. because it's wrong, and now we'll get back to the breath because it's right. We don't really think so, like in the words I'm saying, but that can be the structure or the paradigm that we're operating in, totally unseen. And we could meditate for 30 years that way and not even know it. Or we wake up, we notice desire in the mind, feel it. Perhaps we feel it even in the mind is constricted, or better yet, we feel into the body, and we feel the body, we feel the wanting in the body, the tension, the craving in the body. And the information is clear. There's no intellectually saying this is right or wrong. The information that we get is this is suffering. Because a constricted body is a suffering body. That's not a judgment. It just feels better when our body is relaxed than when it's constricted. Yeah? And then, it's like, oh, that's not good. That feels like this. Oh. Again, no words, just clear seeing, just discerning the truth of how things are. When I constantly dream of vacationing in Bali, when I become aware of it and I'm present, I see that I'm suffering. I feel my body contracted, or maybe I feel my mind tight, grasping, wanting something that's not there. And in that moment of coming into contact with that truth, discernment arises and wisdom begins to grow. That cannot happen while we're making that event of dreaming about the beach. That cannot happen while we're making it wrong. It's blocked. The clear seeing is blocked. When we're sitting and we feel some discomfort in the body, some pain in the body, and we decide not to move, is the non-moving based on judgment that not moving when you sit is right and moving is wrong? Or perhaps is there clear seeing in the moment that there is some fear? You know the one where it's only like 10 minutes into the sit and you get a little twinge? And, right? You know what I'm about to say. What's this going to be like in 20 more minutes? That one? And you see that and you decide not to move because you don't want to cultivate the mind state of fear. That's not moving based on discernment. Oh, I'm just actually, this is just mild. I'm just afraid of what it's going to be like in 20 minutes. If I move now, I'm not moving because it hurts. I'm moving because there's fear in the mind. And I don't want to cultivate that. That's discernment. Judgment is don't move. Not moving is right. It's in the category of good or right. So this is everywhere. Once you start to feel into this template or this paradigm shift, you'll see it everywhere throughout your whole life. Oh, look, I could. Let's look at a few more. How about in relation to practicing with the precepts. In the beginning, we can be a bit more kind of on the good and bad side with them. You know, this list says don't do this, or my teacher says this, or the Buddha says this, so then I won't do it. And again, my Lord, if everyone in the world followed the precepts because they were the right thing to do or that they were good, more power to them. But as our practice deepens, as we continue to walk the Eightfold Path, meaning as we become more sensitive to suffering, that's one way you could describe this movement on the path, is our ability and our sensitivity to know suffering. As we become more sensitive to suffering and its causes, also and happiness and its causes, we see from our own experience that lying, just to choose one, is painful. Not that it's wrong, not that it's on a list that we're not supposed to do, but in the moment experience, lying or even not leave just wrong speech is painful. It leads to suffering. I had such a great example of that. Just a couple weeks ago, I was giving a Dharma talk, and I got like a little flippant, like a little too funny, or, you know, and it wasn't like terrible, and probably no one kind of went, gee, I can't believe you said that. But I felt it. And I noticed later that night, kind of lying in bed, it was there. It was there. And even a little bit like the next morning, it was there. That's discernment. That's knowing that talking like that, from at least for me, maybe for someone it wouldn't be a problem, but for this person in their development right now, that led to agitation in my mind. That's discernment. Judgment is, I shouldn't have said that. Who shouldn't have said that? I. The I is very strong in kind of more solid when judgment is operating. I'm just doing a little editing in the moment, so give me a minute. If you look around at the world, and you look around at all the spiritual teachings that are available to all people in the world, whether it's, I don't think there's anyone, any human being on this earth that doesn't have ways to deeply understand life, whether it's the indigenous, you know, what would be on that side of things, the indigenous person in a tribe in the Amazon. They would have a way, right, in their culture of exploring and deeply knowing the truth of the way things are. Everyone has lots of guidance available to them. It's there. It's not hidden. How are we doing with that? We don't really put it into practice very well, do we? Look at the world. Look at the paradigm of the world in general in relation to what we are counseled to do by our wisest teachings. We're a little bit, I like to say maybe a little slow on getting it. A little slow on the draw. But what we have going for us is two things. We're not stupid, and we have a deep, deep ingrained homing device to be happy and free. We've got those two things going for us. And when we see, and to the degree that we clearly see, what really brings happiness, not what we think or are told or have been habituated to understand what brings happiness, but when we clearly see what does, there's no right and wrong about it. We naturally, there's no decision, because even decisions are in the realm of this and that. I'll decide to do this rather than do that. We just gravitate towards it. And conversely, when we see, really see, what leads to our suffering, we just naturally move away from it. No one doing it. The self doesn't do that. The self's job is to cling. It's wisdom, it's discernment that steers the ship. And to the degree that this starts to happen for us, is to the degree that we can be happy, that we can walk through this world with wisdom and compassion as our human birthright. We can embody that. We can realize that potentiality. We wake up to wisdom and compassion. We don't get it. It's here. We just wake up to it by waking up to the truth of the way things are. And we don't wake up to wisdom and compassion just for ourselves. In fact, as we wake up more and more and more to wisdom and compassion, it becomes clear that we're not just doing it for ourselves. It's not something we have to decide, well, I'm not going to just do this for myself. It doesn't work that way. Remember, the eye's job is to cling. That's just what it does. It's afraid and it just tries not to freak out. As we wake up to wisdom and compassion and embody it, the truth that we're not doing it for ourselves comes along with that. And my friends, this planet and all the life on this planet could really use us waking up right now. If we are to continue on as a species on some level that's more than just survival, just base animal survival, then we need to wake up to the truth of the way things are, both in this largest realm, but also in how we are with each other. We need to wake up and understand things like racism need to be understood, woken up to, and made a thing of the past. climate change needs to be woken up to, understood clearly, so it can be made a thing of the past. All our intolerances with ourselves first, actually, and with each other need to be woken up to, understood. How? Not through judgment, through seeing clearly and made a thing of the past. How? Understood how? By paying attention. Always comes back to mindfulness, doesn't it? By paying attention, increasingly exquisite attention, just to the here and now. When we pay attention in this way, or to the degree that we pay attention in this way, right? Because it's a process. It's not just like, oh, I've made it or I haven't made it. It's a continual unfolding. When we pay attention in this way, without judgment, this is so important. The judgment comes in, it blocks everything. When we pay attention to the present moment, our sensitivity to happiness and suffering and what leads to each gets very refined. And to the degree that it gets refined, we see how things are. And in that seeing, all the problems get resolved. We don't resolve them. They just get resolved. They get resolved in our own hearts and minds, and they get resolved within ourselves, in our collective hearts and minds, in our relationships with each other. So, the end. We have some time for discussion or questions. Yeah. Anything that wasn't clear or anything you'd like to comment on or ask about, please be happy to talk with you. Yeah. Yeah, good. Did you hear that question? When I first had the idea, when it came to me that I was flippant, it sounded like a judgment. So how was that a discernment? And yeah, yeah. Because it didn't come to me as a thought. It just came like, yeah, non-intellectual, just that's a constricted mind state. That's right. Does that feel good? Does it feel good? That feels good. So I knew no intellectual, no needing to decide, gee, that's not good. That's on that side of the fence. Just nope, suffering. It's not intellectual. Our discernment is not of the intellectual mind. This is hard for us to trust, especially in the beginning. We come, this place got built with the intellect. I mean, it got built with the heart because of also of the generosity and the volunteering. But like, how do you design like to make this roof not fall down? We can trust that, but we don't have experience much trusting getting information in another way. Some of our native cultures do, or indigenous cultures, they know all about that. In fact, it's probably flipped, perhaps. I may be talking, not know what I'm talking about, but I think there are people in this world still that know all about getting information, truthful information, in a way that's other than of the intellect. So, but in this culture, we don't know it so much, so it's very difficult to trust until we start to have some experience with it. But that's a great question. How do you know that's not just judgment? You want to find out for yourself and your own experience when you start to know, and when you start to know, just know. No one has to tell you. Doesn't have to be in a list. It's no, there's no words in the mind. It's just so. Yeah. Someone over here was that you? Yeah. Mm. Mm-hmm. Can you give an example? Yeah. Yep. Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure, sure. Yep. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's a good... Right, right. I get how you could see it that way. So first of all, this isn't just predicated on the body. Body is a great way to get truthful information, actually, and I'll talk about that in a moment. But you can know suffering in your mind. You can know what a constricted heart and mind feel like. So it's not just knowing it in the body. And the body is an excellent way to get truthful information. With post-traumatic stress, the body actually is being truthful, because in that moment, in the mind, it cannot discern between what's present and what happened in the past. The body is actually being truthful because it's relating to what happened in the past. It actually is being truthful. Where the problem is, isn't with the body. The problem is with PTSD or other types of trauma is called overcoupling. The mind isn't able to take the experiences and know this belongs over here and this belongs over here. They get glommed together. So, you know, when the car backfires, it's not at a, the mind doesn't have the ability to go car artillery. It's just, it's called overcoupled. And so actually the body is being truthful because it's responding to getting shelled with artillery. The body will always give you truthful information. When you stub your toe, the body doesn't have pleasant sensations. It has painful sensations. Aversion is in the mind. It's a mind state. The body doesn't have the ability to do that. It just, all it does is have sensations based on what's happening. It doesn't have the ability to deceive. Oranges can't speak. The body can't deceive. It doesn't have that ability. But, you know, don't take my word for it. It's great. Just that question is shows. It's like, yeah, but what about, look, you know, it's good. Look into it. Look into your own experience and see. Yeah. Discerning doesn't say this is better than something else. That is in the, do you see the duality in that? That's in the realm of judgment. Discerning simply knows. It doesn't express it in words. Well, whenever we go into words, we are confined by the realm of the language. So whenever we use words, we're using concepts. But when discernment is happening, it's not verbal. It's not intellectual. To speak, we have to be involved with the intellect. We have to use that part of the mind that can form sentences the way I am now, can recall meaning and blah, blah, blah. But discernment is not of that. Oh yeah, that's what I'm saying. When we're in language, we're in the realm of concepts. You're right. You're absolutely right. Well, when discernment is happening, we don't have to jump to that stage. It's just so. But to give a Dharma talk about what would be more helpful for you to hear? Something's not working for you. What would be helpful for you to either understand this or... Oh, okay. Oh, we can't. The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. We're in. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. No, you're right. Yeah. Yep.
And it then makes me aware of how false attracted I am to adjectives, because I can place humble appreciation in neither this nor that, but in the range of shades between this and that.
Mm-hmm.
But am I still judging?
Mm.
And if I am, I can't find confidence in facilitation that I would
bring to the table a conversation table?
Yes. So relying on language.
Yeah.
To support the investigation.
We have to remember what realm we're in. When we're having a conversation, just talking and using adjectives to describe, that was such a sad movie or whatever. That's fine. That's great. That's what they're for. You're just kind of saying what it was like for you, and you use adjectives. But when it comes to freeing the heart and mind, now we're in a different ballpark. We're playing a different game now. Just to know that the division of things in that way, it's just not helpful. It's not even bad. Remember the thing about craving. It's not that it's wrong or bad at all. And use it where it's appropriate to use it. Use the intellect, use adjectives. They're great. I mean, where would poets be? Like, wow, that's beautiful. But just to know the limitation of it and what ballpark we're in, that's all. Then there's no problem. Yeah.
And we had bad habits in the past where it's just like,
yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
But you know, through mindfulness and practice, Mm. It's like, oh, I recognize that.
Yes.
So it's just like, okay, I recognize that judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And I see what it feels like to me. I see that.
Great.
I'm going to make a different choice.
Beautiful. Great. More discernment. More in the realm of discernment. Yes. I know where this is going. Here's the hook. Right? He threw the hook. And discernment comes and knows, not intellectually, but knows, I know where this train is going if I get on it. And that part of us that doesn't want to suffer, remember what I said, what we've got going for us, says, no, thank you. And you choose something else. You choose something else. You don't choose it. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great. Only yogis speak like that, you know? Mm-hmm. But you couldn't have made a different choice. What's going to help for the next time? Here's the crux. What will help for the next time? What is it going to be? What experience did... Right, but what experience did you have that will support just being open and loving with him the next time? This is it. This is it. Yeah, you said it. No, what experience did you have this time when you judged him as wrong? Yes, yes. There's a part of you that isn't of that it's wrong to do that. It's not of that realm. It's not of words that knows you were suffering. That tight heart is suffering. That will be a cause and condition for next time. It doesn't mean it will happen, but it will support next time when the judgment starts to arise, you might go, which is what you were talking about. Because we need a brick in the head 100 times, 1,000 times. Remember, we're a little slow on the draw? How many times have you gotten caught with your husband in that? Yeah, yeah. You'll need to judge your son, probably many, many, many times and feel that the effect of that. And at some point, the cumulative discernment, the cumulative knowing of that, oh, not going there. But you don't say, I'm not going there, because it doesn't happen on an intellectual level. It just happens. There's a reason the Buddha put dukkha as the first noble truth. And there's something that we're supposed to do with each noble truth. There's the truth, and then there is a direction or a teaching of what we're supposed to do with it. And the first noble truth, the noble truth of agitation, of suffering, of unsatisfactoriness, is to be experienced. Through that experience comes wisdom and letting go. You good. So if we're going to suffer, best to really glean what it has to teach us, right? So you probably have heard this. There's suffering that leads to more suffering. Judging your granddaughter. Oh, I did it again. I am such a terrible grandparent. I can't believe I did that again. What is my problem? She's just a little kid. Here I am being an idiot. So that's the suffering that leads to more suffering. Or suffering and, all right, judgment leads to suffering. Wanting her to be different, i.e. messing with life. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, right. And when we see that, it leads to less suffering. This is it. This is the mortar and brick of our practice. Good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 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 yep. That, so that's a great question that always comes up. Did everyone hear that? Do we just sit back and never take action? No. The question is, do we take action based on reactivity, which is supported by right and wrong, or do we take reaction, do we take a response or take action, it's getting late, based on clear seeing and the presence and the stillness and the space that that gives us and allows us to be able to take that action that's hopefully as skillful as possible. It's not about taking it or not taking it, it's what's our jumping off point. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yep. Is that clear? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you engage her, you join her, Aikido, you do Aikido. Join and redirect. Yeah. Right. One more? Okay. Oh, I was looking here, sorry. I don't know. I mean, I hiked the Long Trail in Vermont two summers ago. It's 280 miles in 26 days. I'm not sure if I discerned anything from doing that. I think this is what I could say. Being outdoors in nature for extended periods of time really supports wisdom. That I do know. Whether you're hiking or standing on your head or whatever, just waking up, living, going to sleep, spending our days and nights outside for extended periods of time, it's a good thing. Thank you, everyone. Good to be with you.
This talk, like all programs at Common Ground, is offered freely in the spirit of generosity. To learn more about Common Ground and its programs, or if you would like to donate, please visit our website, www.commongroundmeditation.org.